This week, stocks roared back with the NASDAQ posting a new record all-time high and silver and gold holding firm despite dollar strength. Well, welcome back to Gold Seek Radio, everyone. Your host, Chris Waltzek, here. Another big show. On the Kaiser Report this week, they noted that J.P. Morgan has accumulated, wait for it, 140 million ounces of silver. That's not dollars, folks. That's ounces. That's a room filled to the ceiling with 70-pound bars. And not to be outdone, Russia now has another $70 million, at least of their own, piles and piles of 70-pound silver bars. What do these big, deep pockets know that the rest of us need to know? I discussed that this week with Arch Crawford from the Crawford Report. We also discussed the fact that the gold-to-silver ratio recently touched 80 to 1, even though the in-ground earth supply is roughly 10 or 20 to 1. So we've extended way beyond the normal ratio. Add to the mix the fact that above-ground reserves, stockpiles, favor silver. There's actually more gold above ground available right now. The World Gold Council indicates as much as 2 times more gold than silver. Just those two metrics alone sure make AG look good. Many folks calling for up to $70 on silver in the next few years. Plus, we also discuss Bitcoin, my favorite topic. When you put a Fibonacci projection, a 1.618 on the current levels, if we can hold support around 5,700 to 8,000, it suggests a run to 36 to 40,000. I know those are nosebleed levels, but it's still possible. And interestingly, this coincides with Bitcoin super investor Mike Novogratz. Former Wall Street titan jumped ship onto the crypto game. And then when the show just couldn't get any better, Ralph Acampora, top Wall Street legendary technical analyst, the professor of TA, returns to the show from Altera Wealth Management. He says we've grown complacent here, and even though volatility has increased lately, he's looking for some big moves higher. And after our interview, it kept moving higher. Maybe he's onto something there. He suggests a couple of stocks, and I throw one of my favorites in there as well. Robert Ian wraps up the show with his latest report, and we want you to sign up for the Alpha Stocks newsletter. Our shares continue to outperform the indices and then some as we create portfolios every week, a new portfolio that is tailored to the current market conditions. So everybody has a chance to adjust their portfolios. And every time you sign up, you are supporting this free show, which we'd like to keep free. We're now on our 12th year consecutively. Remember to call in the Q&A hotline. I hope to have that put up next week. The number 641-715-3900, and you'll want the mailbox number too, 514049. Please jot it down, 641-715-3900, and then punch in our mailbox number 514049. You can record and cancel as many as you like. I have a few brand new ASIC Bitcoin and Litecoin miners. These are directly from the Beijing manufacturing plant. They haven't even been opened. They have the original tape and seals on the boxes. The current ratings of the house that I'm in really will not allow me to run anything consecutively, and we have the power supplies too. I'm selling them at a big discount, about two-thirds less than the original price. So make me an offer I can't refuse, and I have to tell you, we've had a lot of interest on these. I don't expect them to last past Sunday or Monday this weekend. So send me an email message, gsr@hughes.net, if you want the world's best and fastest Bitcoin miner. It's not for everybody. I mean, this is really for a more of a technically savvy person, someone who enjoys tinkering. If you're a big believer, as I am, in Bitcoin and the cryptosphere, I've been mining now for almost a year. GoldSeek.com begins now with a market weather recap. Visibility virtually unlimited over the precious metal sector this week on strong economic numbers, which indicated signs of potential inflation. That tends to turn investors to the world's best inflation safe haven, gold. The elemental added 60 cents at 1324 after breaking through long-term trend line resistance from 2011 all the way down to the recent lows, and it's still holding support. Meanwhile, silver ended at break-even at $16.47. The precious metal shares gained just a few cents, like silver, ending up 15 cents at $78.90. Black gold picked up nearly a dollar, closing at $62 in a wildly bullish consolidation, hinting at potential prices of $65 to $70 in the weeks ahead. And the Bitcoin ETF was off under a little bit of pressure this week. It was tapped by its downtrend line we've been talking about. Still consolidating. For the fifth month in a row, the U.S. jobless rate remained fixed at a 17-year low, hovering at 4.1%. Hundreds of thousands of new jobs were filled, to the surprise of Wall Street analysts. Nevertheless, the decades-long trend of stagnant wage growth continues to plague the working and middle classes. According to the U.S. Labor Department, we added 313,000 new jobs in February, besting most economists' expectations. Elsewhere, it's no surprise with record jobs numbers that the Federal Reserve would remain on track for more interest rate hikes this year. On Wednesday, the Fed's Beige Book report noted tightening labor markets improved the case for interest rate hikes. The Fed funds futures at the CME Group indicated 89% odds of a rate hike this month on the 21st and 70% odds of a second rate hike at the June FOMC meeting, and then higher than expected rates of a third rate hike later this year. So they may actually follow through, at least given the current economic environment, with three rate hikes. But precious metals, bottom line, well, the technical position remains favorable, with gold testing support and holding despite the surprising dollar strength. The current short-term trading range suggests the odds of an assault on 1400 in the next few weeks if we don't have an explosive dollar rally. I'd like to see silver, though, also move above resistance, and I'd like to see a stronger XAU. I'm also long-term bullish on Bitcoin, but we've got to break above and hold the downtrend line. Moving on to the Wall Street Report, nary a cloud was seen over the New York Stock Exchange on strong economic job growth, news that tensions between the U.S. and North Korea might be declining. At Friday's close, the Dow Jones added nearly 803% at 25,335. The S&P 500 picked up 95 points, 2%, closing at 2786, but it was the NASDAQ composite that once again stole the show, blasting higher and an unbelievable 302 points, 4%, closing at 7560, an all-time record high yet again. The top story moving the sector, comments from the POTUS, who agreed to meet with the North Korean leader. The two have exchanged schoolboy-like repartee for several months. Evidently, Pyongyang is willing to hold the talks with the U.S. on denuclearization, which is clearly a solid sign of good faith. North Korean officials offered to suspend the tests during the proposed discussions. Although most political experts and pundits have expressed their doubts that North Korea will comply with their adamant demand to shut down the nuclear operations, this has certainly been a presidential term of many firsts. So I find this to be an extremely positive outcome. According to a senior South Korean official, this could occur as soon as May of this year. South Korean stocks move sharply higher on the positive news. In related news, departure of the economic advisor Gary Cohn, a former Wall Street banker, was likely directed to the newly proposed protectionist tariffs on steel and aluminum, although several hundred new manufacturing jobs have been announced since those tariffs were proposed. One really wonders if the U.S. has the bargaining power right now to enforce such tariffs, particularly with key trading partners holding enormous amounts of U.S. debt. Were the BRICS nation, which of course includes Brazil, Russia, India, China, and Spain, to retaliate against these protectionist policies, it might ignite an inflationary firestorm with profound implications for the U.S. economy. U.S. shares, bottom line. Clearly, the tensions have eased between the U.S. and North Korea, at least for the time being, which removes some of the unknown factors from the markets. This is a big plus. The next FOMC meeting is slated for March 21st, with the odds of a rate hike about 88%. While the 7-indicator greed to fear index has moved up from the most fearful in years, but it remains still in the extreme fear category, suggesting we might still see higher levels in the coming weeks and months ahead. Coming up after the break, more Gold Seek Radio. Better to have on the show with the Dow Jones Industrials, Ralph Acampora of Altera Wealth Management. Hello, sir.
Good morning. Thank you. How are you?
Great to have you back. And we've seen a lot of volatility lately. This caught a lot of investors off guard with some of the volatility. ETNs and ETFs turning upside down. The XIV, I guess, is the most well-known. Give us your thoughts.
I have to say that I think a lot of us, myself included, kind of gotten it to, kind of got used to no volatility and rising prices, and in fact, from a technical point of view, accelerated trends. That's hard to deal with, but we managed to accept it. And now with that coming volatility, and, you know, the Dow or the market in general corrected, what, about 10%? If you look in hindsight, that's normal. What is not normal was the alacrity of the move. And I think that's what we're adjusting to. And honestly, I think we're going to have to see that going forward. And the reason why I say that is because here we are at lofty levels, especially in the Dow, and, you know, to have it points up or down is, on a relative basis, on a percentage basis, is really not nothing. But nonetheless, we're going to have to get used to it.
I think one of the terms that comes to mind, complacency. Investors, traders, they got used to almost perfect conditions in the markets, and tends to lead to big surprises, which is, as you say, I mean, this is normal. This is normal behavior to see some risk enter the market. There's an interesting metric that's being tossed around in Wall Street. Less than half of hedge fund managers have even 5 years of experience. So they don't maybe remember the year 2000 or 1987. So they're not used to the volatility that the rest of us have seen. Does that pose a risk to the markets on a forward basis?
Talking real risks, like the market being down 20 or 30%, I doubt it. I think the fundamentals are too strong. I'll give you another example of that, this generation not knowing history. Interest rates. Everybody's so fearful. Oh my gosh, interest rates are 3%. And then I was on a TV show about a year or so ago, and a young fellow sitting next to me was worried. Oh my heavens, mortgage rates going to 4%. I looked at him. I said, you got to be kidding. I bought an apartment in 1994 in New York City, and I paid 10.5%. I kissed the bank. He didn't charge me 12%. And look at rising rates and compare it to the stock market in the late 40s, early 50s, into early 60s. Guess what? Interest rates went up just like they are now, and so did the stock market. It's not 3% is not the problem. 5% is the problem. Once it hit 5% in 1965, 66, then the bull market ended for another 10 years, 12 years. So I think people just got to go look at history. That's what we technicians do all the time.
No, it's well said. I remember locking in just below 10% on a CD in the early 90s. But we have had a 35-year bond bull, or at least one media source is noting that the long bond, 30-year treasuries, actually still can't wrap my mind around this, but they're claiming that it beat the overall equities market over that time frame. As you say, I don't think there's really a lot to worry about on the horizon for U.S. equities. What do you see?
Well, nothing is totally free of any concerns. And, you know, with the stuff overseas, appears to be some bit of mumbling with North Korea, but, you know, between you and me, I'm kind of a guy you have to show me before you talk me to death. And so that's a concern, number one. Number two, the tariffs. I mean, we're still kicking that around. I don't know what. So there are some unsettling things out there, but I think we'll get past them. I'm basically optimistic.
Again, so much bearish talk from the blogosphere, from every direction. You know, bulls rarely end when everyone is trying to talk down the market. I can remember the year 2000. Everybody talking about the boost they just had from their equities accounts. I'm not hearing that today. I really don't feel like John Q. Public is entirely invested in this bull run. So do you see anything, though, on the horizon that might derail the advance?
I have to look at this tariff situation. I don't know if this is a domino effect. You know, if we go through it with the tariffs against Canada and places like that, honestly, and I don't think anyone else knows, I have to wait and see. That's my major concern right now.
Now, it's interesting because on the one hand, we're hearing that 500 jobs have been promised from U.S. Steel as a result of the aluminum steel tariffs from Washington, several others. But on bigger term basis, trade wars, I don't know that that really benefits anyone long term. It tends to upset trading partners. And so as we wrap up here today, do you care to take a look forward? Does 2018 end higher for U.S. equities investors?
I think we'll probably still have to dance around at current levels. As long as we don't make a new reactionary low below the January low, early February low. And I don't think we will. I think we're successfully consolidating above those lows. And that tells me I think we get another leg up probably in mid-year and slightly higher than where we began. You know, so I'm still optimistic. And, you know, when I look at individual stocks, granted, the Facebooks and the Apples need to consolidate. But, boy, technically, there's no major tops forming in any of these major names. And you got Intel making multi-year highs and going back to its all-time high, which is one of the technology stocks along with Micron, MU. Go look at the monthly charts in those. God, that beautiful pictures. The long-term, they look fantastic.
We like NVIDIA with their GPUs.
There's one thing, when you get into a parabolic situation like that, there's only one thing you look at. Put a trend under it and follow that trend. As long as it stays above that line, you're in. And that's what it's been doing. So, trend's your friend.
It's a great point. I mean, that trend line, who knows if it's self-fulfilling prophecy, but, you know, your safety net. All right, we want to thank you, Ralph Acampora, for your time today.
Okay, sir. Thank you very much.
Arch Crawford combines technical analysis with planetary alignments. He's been at the helm of Crawford Perspectives for over four decades, been able to embrace the new crypto phenomenon, transitioning into this new world post-traditional financial arena and moving into a crypto sphere. In the spirit of rapprochement, we have reconciliation among that crowd in Arch Crawford. Welcome back, Arch.
Delighted to be here.
We were talking. I was stopped in futures contract at 67. I rode that to about 95, 96 on that rebound. You had a similar call around 61, 6200. Give us an idea of what helped you make that decision.
Well, I had some planetary aspects in the December letter, which I thought would one or the other would top various and sundry different markets, whether commodities or currencies or stocks or stock groups. And one was December 2nd and the other was December 17th. And I didn't notice that December 17th was a Sunday. I would have probably put, you know, Friday, Monday weekend top. Well, I had it on December 17th as a top for various and sundry markets. And that was Sunday and it was the top day in the Bitcoin. Then it came down pretty hard. In the January letter said, it looks like it needs another leg down, and then it went down another leg, and then we said it might stop on or about the 618 retracement, and it actually overshot it on the downside a bit, but it popped right back above it within a very short period of time. So then I said, it should probably rally a 50% retracement back up, which would be 6,000 points to 13 to 14,000. And that has yet to happen, but it did pop back up to over 11,000 this week.
I came to a similar conclusion. I just simply took the Fibonacci from the where Bitcoin went parabolic, let's say summer of last year, up to the peak. The low that I was looking for was around the 60, I want to call it 61.8%. And as you said, it eclipsed that. It went to like 68, almost 70%. Your forecast nearly matches mine within a few hundred points. Blasted back up, we're probably going to hit a 50%, 13,000. I wouldn't be surprised if we didn't try to retest that. I mean, I could easily see 36 to 50,000 by year end, or at least 40,000 by year end.
Well, I think that based on the dollar index, I think is one of the worst looking charts that we have right now. It's forming a huge top pattern that has already come down over 15%. And has barely broken out on the downside. And 15% for a currency compared to their trading partners is a huge move. But for the dollar being the reserve currency, it's disastrous, I would think. So now we have a neckline drawn across a head and shoulder top type pattern that has a weak right shoulder, which again is even worse, broke the neckline and has been under it, bouncing up against it for the last 6 or 8 trading days. Today it went back on towards the downside, but it has not broken anything except that neckline. But that is a big deal. And I think it'll go on down from like 90 to 82 in fairly short order. And that could take gold up, it could take the cryptocurrencies up, it could take the silver up, and commodities.
That's precisely the argument I think I would have made if I were put on the spot. I mean, the technical position of the greenback is parallel. I don't know if you want to call it a cup and handle, a double top. It reminds me of an end game moment.
That's happening with the dollar index is that the 50-week moving average is just now breaking below the 200-week moving average.
Yeah, it's the inverse of a golden cross. If you've been in the markets long enough, it's almost a self-fulfilling prophecy. You know, I've heard people argue that it's the institutions and the pension funds there. You know, the Titanics, they turn slowly, you might say. They don't tend to make risky decisions. They like to play along with the longer-term themes, the 50 under the 200. It's really a rather scientific way of determining the potential trend, and they don't like to fight the trend, and they wield considerable power. Once again, Max and Stacy over there at RT on the Kaiser Report, they've been doing some fantastic work in every area. And Stacy, I think it was, brought up an interesting concept, and that was Jamie Dimon making a 180, I guess, on Bitcoin, saying it's very legitimate, and after deeming it worthless, and now he's calling it a material threat to the banking industry. They are, as you may know, fiduciarily responsible when they see a potential threat for their shareholders and stakeholders to make this announcement. They're actually financially liable. He was essentially, you might say, forced to go public with this as an institution. And incidentally, they noted 132 billion ounces of silver physical in their vaults. And keep in mind, just about 8-9 years ago, there was virtually nil in those JP Morgan same vaults. Okay. And then Russia announces right around the same time their bullion holdings. They're stacking 70 pound bars. I counted somewhere in the neighborhood of a few hundred of them, just kind of backing out the image, 70 to $100 million maybe. But in the terms of central banks, it's just a starter allotment.
Technical picture is a triangle. It's an equilateral triangle hitting the top, then hitting the bottom, hitting the top of the trend line, hitting the bottom of the trend line, getting narrower and narrower and narrower. And this, in the last, maybe today or yesterday, it broke down very, very briefly. I've got an hourly chart here, and it bounced right back up into the triangle again. So it's trying to stabilize near the bottom of the triangle, but it's getting near it'll have to be a potential breakout point at some time in the moderately near future.
Exactly. And our friend, and I guess you'd say technical analysis colleague, Clive Mound, I'm sure you've seen some of his work. He has turned bullish, noting that AG, silver, is now at a record gold to silver ratio. You can purchase 80 ounces of silver, nearly a 100 ounce silver bar for one gold doubloon. And he points out the geochemical breakdown in the Earth's crust. He notes it to be about 20 to 1. Of course, you do the simple back-of-the-envelope math. That gives you a fourfold expected increase, he says, $67 to $70 on silver if gold stays stationary. You know, heaven forbid if the actual market forces or Adam Smith's invisible hand is actually allowed to move freely.
Well, I just see the chart pattern is a positive. Of course, the ratio is way out of any kind of historical proportion. So, yes, the silver is probably the better investment, but it's also both the silver and the gold are a very dangerous trade in that the heavy-duty people are trading, and they are watching the chart, and if so many people are respecting a chart, they'll break it and then run it. The gold has a historical thing about it.
I've become a Bitcoin believer in the blockchain concept and the freedom that I believe that it potentially has, and the ability to, I think, knock down the walls of this archaic and oppressive, you might even say draconian, monetary system. Give me your back-of-the-envelope thoughts, please.
Present time, I'm not saying anything except that it'll go back halfway up of what it dropped. That's the limit of my explorations with it.
The pattern that could be building up, this sort of consolidation since December, it would seem to imply, again, if those 5,700 lows hold firm, which I think you'd agree they must to maintain a bullish stance. If that were to hold, I can easily just put a Fibonacci projection, as I'm sure you can, on the chart, and that runs you straight to 36 to 40. Mike Novogratz, you may have heard the name, regularly on CNBC. He's a big wig who jumped ship from Wall Street and went crypto crazy. And he went all in at around, I don't know, 4 and then 8,000. And then the recent dip, he's gone all in again with big money. He's helping the institutions to find an avenue into this highly illiquid market. He's calling for 40,000 by the end of 2018. Your thought?
It is a wild mover, and it can do anything. It can go to zero or it can go to 100,000. I would say to anybody, don't bet the farm on it. If you want to gamble with it and it's fun for you, by all means, it may, it's already done it for a lot of people, got in early, so.
You know, someone just echoed your thoughts here. His name is Ivan. He just goes by the name of Ivan on Tech. Arch, if you run into YouTube, you're bored, check out Ivan on Tech. This young fellow, a young developer, and a huge crypto enthusiast, and typically don't watch something like this, but he really puts up a great show. From J.P. Morgan's own desk, on this chart, they juxtaposed the Tulip Mania, Arch, the NASDAQ bubble of 2000, and Bitcoin, a normalized scale, and so you get a true, unadulterated view. The Tulip Mania makes everything else look like a little bump, and Bitcoin makes the Tulip Mania look like an ant underneath the Empire State. If you want to throw a few pennies, a few chips in here, that's great. The folks who made the buku bucks, they've long since left the arena. You know, they're driving around in their Lambos. We've just recently had a big event in the VIX. I mean, to me, the VIX is behaving kind of similarly to every other time the U.S. equities got too far ahead of themselves. It's after virtually no spike in a couple of years, I would expect volatility at some point to have an explosion. That doesn't sound like manipulation to me, but unfortunately, some of the folks involved in the short VIX, I think this was the XIV, it dropped about 90 to 95%, the ETFs there. Give us your view, your take on U.S. equities.
Well, the VIX, after being the lowest in history for the longest period of time in history, finally broke up through some long-term trend lines and some long-term resistances and blew up to 50 bucks in a day and a half or so. I had posted everywhere the date of the top of the market plus one, but I posted it all the top of the market minus two on several places, including LinkedIn, Facebook, Google, MarketWatch, and whatever other places I could think of, that there was a huge planetary alignment on the 25th of January, and that I thought it would have a big effect, including on a big drop in the markets. It topped the next day. Of course, the biggest down was, I think, February the 5th, which I also newsletter. The flash crash back in 2010 was on, I think, May the 6th, and this was on February the 5th, and those two dates have something in common. They are both the middle date between an eclipse, an equinox, and a solstice. W.D. Gann wrote, the only thing I ever heard him mention about astronomic things, I watched the equinoxes and solstices and the middle date between them, turning points and large changes. That's what we got both on that flash crash.
I just can't point out enough to people, instead of speculating, you know, all in these markets, I like Nassim Taleb. I guess it's a broken record now. His barbell theory, one interpretation would be, well, you might buy way out of the money puts each week, let's say, during these extremes, and maybe it's 0.1% of your portfolio. The other 99% held in safe, diversified bonds and equities funds and things like that, little Bitcoin spread across the spectrum. Buy these way out of the money puts, and before you know it, you've lost almost everything you were investing until that January peak and crash, and then you've doubled your money from that one investment.
Well, I'm going to be promoting the idea that my work has done best on volatility than anything else. And I've been the best predictor of volatility in the market for 40 years. To crash when I was working at Merrill Lynch as a technical analyst.
Well, hat tip for you. And, you know, we have Ralph Acampora scheduled for tomorrow, a featured guest with Ralph Acampora this weekend. Where in the cycle do you see volatility now? Do you agree, you know, we could see another spike or so, and we might even see an uptrend for a longer period of time?
Well, we had such low volatility for so long, it was clear to me when it was going to happen because of the planets. And when we start building volatility, I have predicted the date of the worst crash, like 5 times out of 5, from planets.
And so do you see further volatility ahead?
I do not have it pinned down closely or accurately at this time. What I'm saying is that I would not be surprised at all to see a retest of the lows before we go higher into late April or early May.
What they're saying over at RT, citing analysts who are calling for the market to remain a bit aloft as we move into the November elections, that tends to be a surprisingly bullish cycle. Any thoughts there as we wrap up?
The normal cycle is that the administration does what it can to hype the market up in the last month going into the election period. I don't know if they will try to crash it to get rid of him. I mean, you know, the swamp is fighting back.
The swamp doesn't want to be drained.
That's right. I'm looking for some more difficulty around the eclipses of July and August. And after that, I will be depending on the technical analysis to keep up with the trend that it's most closely matching.
Tell people about the services you provide, please.
I have a newsletter that's been on the market for 40 years now. It's the same price it was in 1977, which is $250 a year. It's 4 pages a month. It's fairly concise. It has charts and easy explanations, but it is based on technical market analysis largely, and with planetary cycles thrown in as the gravy.
We appreciate that special Crawford Perspective sauce. Talk soon, Arch.
Oh, sure. Delighted to be here.
This is Robert Ian with GoldSeek.com Radio. I began discussing the growing practice and developing threat of digital censorship during and after the 2016 presidential election. Growing instances of demonetization for content providers and the occasional termination of YouTube and Twitter channels were par for the course. As many of you who listen to this broadcast and follow other alternative or direct media are aware, ever since the most recent Florida school shooting, many prominent YouTube and some Twitter channels have simply been terminated. Full stop. End of story. In a discussion prior to the 2016 presidential election, Matt Drudge commented that it was ill-advised to build one's brand, identity, and message on platforms that didn't belong to you, which could, and likely would, ultimately be yanked from under you without a moment's notice and with very little recourse. That day has clearly come. The stakes of the information war that pits truth against propaganda and censorship have rapidly reached a new level. There are going to be casualties as this battle progresses. Decentralized peer-to-peer direct communication tips the balance of power in favor of liberty. And anything else tips the balance of power away from liberty. More independent voices will be silenced. I hope only temporarily, as we move toward the all-important 2018 midterm elections. If Trump gains support in both houses of Congress, the agenda items he has wanted to advance or has been waiting to advance will become legislation in the second half of his first term. If he loses support, an attempt will be made to impeach him, and everyone who voted for him or has supported him since the November election of 2016. The war against alternative media is going to grow more fierce. Decentralized peer-to-peer direct communication is the greatest threat to every swamp creature that dwells in Washington. The time to support those in the alternative media is now. And that means if viewers and listeners have to navigate their browsers to multiple websites and platforms to see, read, and listen to multiple thought leaders, then that is what you must do. Because outright censorship and termination of free speech, especially speech that you don't agree with, or isn't politically correct, or makes you uncomfortable, that is the very speech you must defend. The only safe space you are entitled to is the one you create by changing the channel or ignoring what you believe to be irrelevant viewpoints. Some voices will disappear temporarily, some permanently, and new ones will emerge. Build change into how you seek out and absorb the myriad of direct, independent content creators that will continue to shape the future of the world. Some may have lost the battle these past few weeks, but I remain confident that in the end, independent thought and leadership will ultimately redefine and win the media war. And until next time, this is Robert Ian with ConquerChange.com. Thanks, Chris.
It's just a pleasure to welcome back Bix. We're a big precious metals aficionado and now a crypto enthusiast as well. He actually caught this trend earlier than most of us out here. He's ahead of us, and it seems like, you know, light bulbs when it comes to cryptos, Bix. Wouldn't you agree? It's just slowly and one by one, but once that bulb lights up, it's bright.
You know, the beginning was not that safe to get into it. There was a lot of changes, a lot of security enhancements on all the cryptos. But now it's clear that there are people behind the scenes, I think, assisting in this transition out of the old system and into something new.
Let's talk about how quickly this has progressed here. Last night I was looking at a portfolio and I'm thinking, well, you know, this thing is only up threefold since September. And then I had to catch myself and say, you're upset because an altcoin's only up three multiples since September. September's like 3 months ago. So let's backtrack 12 months. I was listening to Kaiser Report. He and Stacey Herbert have some great ideas for 2018. They point out, look, Bitcoin was like $900 and then it hit 9,000. So that's a 10X. And then it again up to 20,000. This is the big story. All the detractors keep coming on there, and I've noticed that he started to pull back a little bit and give them a little bit of room and realize, wait a minute, everybody's going to come to this conclusion independently and at their own speed. One of the central banks we predict in 2018 will break free from their colleagues, from their cadre, and get on board the Bitcoin theme. And he says, when that happens, Katie, bar the doors on this thing. Give us an idea just where you think it'll all lead.
Well, a lot of it leads back to my research into the Federal Reserve Bank of Boston. The original Roderuda information that there were people behind the scenes controlling things with computers and derivatives for the good and the bad. So they were trying to maintain the status quo for a very long time. But they also always had a problem. This goes back to 1913. Is that how do you go from an unbacked system to a metal system or any other system without causing major chaos, death, and destruction? Because when the monetary system breaks down, everybody loses everything. And that was the big problem why silver and gold could not break free. It was not allowed to break free, especially when computers and derivatives came in. And the last attempt was 2008, and now, after 2008 failed and they bailed out the banks again, right away, Satoshi Nakamoto, supposedly, whoever he is or they are, came out with the Bitcoin white paper. And that Bitcoin white paper showed people that there was another way. And we've been in this transition for a while now, and safe in the beginning, but it's becoming more and more safe. As more problems come up, they get fixed. It's anti-fragile, meaning every time it breaks, it gets fixed, and that problem never happens again.
You know, it's well said, and I can attest to your comments on Satoshi Nakamoto's 7-page paper, roughly, give or take there. I mean, that was a big eye-opener for me. I still feel like I was kind of slow to this, because I think, like many of us, I had an interest, and then it waned, and an interest again, and then it waned. I'm sure so many folks can relate to it. And so when I read his paper, and, you know, was at the time I was a student of mathematics and statistics and probability theory, and so I said, wait a minute. This is a solution to the trust issue. This is why we've needed, or we think we've needed, these third-party institutions, right, BICs, for so long to take care of our transaction, our mortgages, because we needed a third party. We needed a ledger accounting system where this arbitrator in the center says, look, A is borrowing from B and B has borrowed from A. Okay, and we're going to be the referee of this transaction. What Satoshi did, as we all know now, you know, said, look, we can do this mathematically. We don't need a third party anymore. And we can not only get around that issue, but we can get around the security issue by having a high enough hash rate, i.e. a proof of work, if you will, through mining processes to make sure that the nodes have a consensus. So we have security through consensus. We have decentralization, right? And so everybody agrees. Everybody gets on board. And what I found interesting is you might have heard Antonopoulos, you know, the Andreas Antonopoulos, right? Yeah, he's the best, right? He said, yes, we hear all the time of how it could be hacked. And he said, yes, it could. But it would take the combined computing power of the United States government and several billion dollars to mine and break down the blockchain for just a few minutes and make maybe a few Bitcoin or something. And he said, it's not economically feasible. Why not just use that same computing power to mine Bitcoin and make trillions of dollars? It was his point. So it's a remarkably robust system. Moving on, give us an idea of what you see for 2018. Every year, we've seen exponential growth in the number of pundits calling for the end of Bitcoin.
Yeah, according to my analysis of it, for a long time, they were looking for a way to get out of the old system. They knew how corrupt it was. They, meaning Federal Reserve, the Treasury, people literally good guys within the system. And they couldn't find a way to do it because every solution went back to gold and silver. And the gold and silver was so concentrated in the hands of the banksters and the banks, it didn't make sense to give them the power back. So they decided, hey, We've been working on this cryptography type of currency for the past 30 years, going back to the 70s and 80s when the original computer programs were written for our financial system by Alan Greenspan. This can work. We can do this, but we're going to have to get it into the hands of the people. We don't want it concentrated into a small group of people, because that was our problem with gold and silver. So if we can spread it out, you know, they make hiccups happen all the time. When it gets too concentrated, they'll take people out. The Mt. Gox thing was all, it was not a hack. It was one of the exchanges that rehypothecates cryptos, just like they do in the stock exchange and the comics and all that. People were taking out their cryptos, so they obviously had to shut their doors, because you look at the volumes and they're not trading real cryptos in these exchanges. There's all kinds of things going on that are being orchestrated by the Fed and the Treasury to get us out of the old system into a new system without destroying what we've built in our country, without harming the people who are absolutely dependent upon the monetary system working for their food, for their water, for their power, for everything. This is a way to transition out. So that's why I see 2018. We're going to be transitioning out of the old system and into this new cryptography-based monetary system. And with that comes a way to go around the COMEX and the LBMA.
Firstly, hat tip for being the one who recognized that Sir Alan Greenspan, you might say, created the first crypto, although that's kind of not really a crypto, but the first software money, and he did so for the Federal Reserve. And what's so ironic here is he let maybe the genie out of the bottle. And now, of course, you take that formula, that algorithm, you tie it to the blockchain. Transparency will be brought to these precious metals markets. Clearly, the powers that be haven't even quite woken up to this yet. The day of reckoning for the manipulation has gone from maybe it could have been 5 to 10 years from now. It's got to be just around the corner. And you seem to think that 2018 might be the year.
I can tell you this. The cryptos have the ability to free the metals in that they can inject truth and honesty into exchanges. That's exactly what's being done with Veritasium, which is Reggie Middleton's way of injecting truth and honesty into the Jamaican Stock Exchange. He's right on the brink of announcing a deal with them. He's working with the German Stock Exchange. And this doesn't get implemented into the exchange. It takes everything out of the exchange and allows people to deal on a peer-to-peer basis. So there's no brokers, dealers, no DTCC, no criminal banks. Nobody in between the transaction, hey, I have a share to sell or a piece of metal to sell, and you have cash to give me, we can deal person to person, peer to peer.
The DTCC is this sort of ominous shadow entity that supposedly controls essentially every share that's ever been issued on the exchanges of the United States. So you really, just like your mortgage, you don't own your house, you know, and even if you hold your mortgage, you still don't own your home. Same thing with your shares that you think you have equity in. Fast forward to Bix's point here. You can go to Ether Delta today. And you can, on your Ledger S, plug it into your laptop or your iPhone or Android. You can trade from one peer to another person directly, bypassing the exchange altogether. Pull that Ledger X out. You are your brokerage, your clearinghouse, your market maker, and your bank all in one.
Absolutely. And that's what the cryptos will be providing, one of the services, because the blockchain is a trust machine. And that's what we need injected, especially the next time these bankers break down, and they will break down again. You know, you got Steve Mnuchin, who is the head of IT for Goldman Sachs, controlling all markets right now. But at some point, the bankers are going to need another bailout, and we're going to be able to say, no, we have a new system that's ready to go, peer-to-peer transactions. We don't need Goldman Sachs. We don't need JP Morgan. We don't need anybody, and we can be our own bank. And that is going to shock them to their core. It kind of already is. But it's really going to come into play the next time they can write too many derivatives and one of those derivative bombs goes bad, just like in 2008.
We see a petri dish of this playing out, don't we, in Venezuela right now? It's happening right now in real time. These people, God bless them. I mean, they're starving. There are no jobs. You have runaway inflation, maybe not quite hyperinflation, but when I look at the chart of gold, is up something like 100-fold in terms of the Bolivar. You have to go look at the charts up for it. I'll post them with this interview. The people who are lucky enough to get some ASIC miners, some ant miners from Bitmain and Beijing, are literally surviving off of mining for Bitcoin. Ari David Paul, money manager who managed big pension funds. He was the one you may have seen on CNBC and a few of the other channels recently who made the big $1 million bet that Bitcoin was going to 50,000, big options call. And of course, he made it clear, look, I'm not really making a bet. All I'm trying to do is reduce my exposure because Bitcoin is so volatile that I can simply buy some calls and get 30 to 1 if it hits 100,000 to 150,000. He says, look, I've been in this industry for over a decade. The institutional money, pension funds and the endowment funds are only starting to move in because they don't have the third parties that they need to make this happen yet. February of this year and running into the summer, the institutional money will pour in all the way till December of the end of 2018. And he says, now, if you want to worry about a bubble, talk to me about a bubble at the end of next year. What do you think?
It's like filling Dixie cups with a fire hose right now. All these people want in. All the longtime crypto holders now are saying, now is when I hold on the tightest. So they're gonna try to come in and buy. They're gonna create a lot of FUD, fear, uncertainty, and doubt, and try to shake people out of their hands. But truthfully, we've been hardened. We've been hardened to volatility. So when you have everybody come in to buy and the people who really understand it not willing to let go of any of their cryptos, the ingredients for a huge price explosion.
I couldn't have said any better. Even if we didn't have another 2017-style year, 5X this year or 2X, that sure beats anything we've seen in any other market that I saw this year. Why don't we just do a quick little overview of your thoughts on silver, because I'd be remiss if I didn't give you the floor. Do you see some Bitcoin-style profits ahead for the precious metals, and why?
I do for silver. I don't necessarily for gold. Mainly for silver because we are moving into a high-tech world, and that silver is going to be needed on the industrial side, absolutely. There's all kinds of hidden technologies that are going to get with this changing of the guard, shall we say. So, but it won't happen until the criminality of the exchanges is shut down. Right now, J.P. Morgan and Citibank control all the futures options, and that's all there really is, truthfully, in silver. There's only futures and options. There's no physical metal exchange. They say the LBMA is, but we can tell by the volumes of 100 billion ounces a year that it's not a physical exchange. See, this year, the cryptos will come in to assist the gold and silver guys to free up their market into a peer-to-peer type exchange. I don't know which one will be the winning crypto in that world, but do see where there's a need, a crypto company will provide a solution, and that's exactly what's coming for silver and gold this year. The biggest problem I see with gold is there's just so much of it that they're hiding, and nobody really knows what it's worth. And it's held by such a tiny few people. You don't need gold in a situation where you believe in the currency. And I truly believe in the cryptography, and that 2 + 2 will always equal 4 in cryptos. So we'll see what happens for gold. But definitely silver should break free.
The only cloud I see on the horizon, as far as you talking about the security and the encryption aspects, which is so great that you get it too, because like you said, it's so hard for me to find peers and colleagues who are enthusiastic. I spend most of my time just trying to screw the light bulb in for most people, let alone turning it on. But the only shadow I see on the horizon, and I don't think it's anything major, quantum computing involving qubits. It would be very easy for a quantum computer if you focused all of its energy on breaking, you know, the encryption of Bitcoin. But my feeling there is that really you'd only be able to do one wallet at a time. They'll put it in a paper wallet, and or they'll just transfer it into, you know, something that doesn't require proof of work, maybe something, a non-mineable crypto.
Yeah, I mean, my comment would be a couple fold. One, I talked to Cliff High about this, and he's done work in quantum computing, and he said it's a long way away. But it's also a situation where Bitcoin isn't the only cryptocurrency. It has been, ever since kind of the fight between SegWit and the core developers and all that, people have opened their eyes to a whole new world of different currencies and different tokens especially. And the tokenization of a company or an asset within a company is kind of like barter, which is a better form of exchange than using money. So I think Bitcoin was the first, but I don't think at all that it's going to be the last, or even necessarily is going to come out on top at the end.
It has the first mover advantage. It has clearly the world's best developers. It also has much, much needed, and I think ignored and maligned infrastructure. People don't think about the fact this is the world's greatest supercomputer that we're involved in. We don't know which will be the victorious. We hope that Bitcoin is the Amazon, right? Circa 1996, 1997, right?
I don't own much Bitcoin at all, and I'm not a gigantic fan of the type of Bitcoin hoarding type of thing for value. I'm more into the companies creating products with cryptocurrencies, crypto tokens. I think there's much more potential there for humanity to embrace that than, you know, a few thousand people hoarding all their wealth in Bitcoin.
Now, you make a good point. I know that you've been quite a proponent of SALT, and I've had several on the phone. We're still trying to get an interview together, but it's this stage in their development.
Because they're a bridge between the old way of banking and the new crypto world.
It allows folks who are hodling their Bitcoin and other tokens, but primarily Bitcoin, to, of course, leverage that up. They treat it as an asset, and they have a really neat process. I actually quizzed the developers on this over the phone. They have a very neat algorithm that instead of you getting, you know, being worried about a margin call all the time, you know, I can't sleep tonight, you know, is Bitcoin going up or is it going down? Am I tokens? No, no, no. They just slice it. They take little slices out automatically. So, you know, you don't have this terrible liquidation fear that others might have.
That's a good way to do it. But another way to look at it is for a bank to repossess a house is horrible on many fronts. It's also very costly. If you have someone who has a cryptocurrency used as collateral and all the parameters are set forth in the smart contract, it's very easy to do, and the banks perfect their collateral automatically. And banks love it. The crypto people love it because it's not based on your credit rating or how good the system thinks you are. It's based on your collateral. And yeah, it's a great invention, and it's going to change the world of banking.
And it really gives folks who are believers in the whole crypto domain, the crypto sphere, more versatility. It creates utility, creates value, I think, throughout the entire space. As we wrap up here, one last quick comment. Max Keiser, I think, came up with an interesting scenario. He's looking for 2,400 gold. But he doesn't share your outlook on the yellow metal. He believes they've got a big pile of profits who have picked up on this Bitcoin thing. And so they're going to turn to gold as Bitcoin 2.0. You know, everyone's been talking about Bitcoin as gold 2.0. Well, he thinks the young crowd will say, wouldn't this be retro of me to sell a tenth of a Bitcoin and buy an ounce of gold?
Yes, it absolutely makes sense. But because these people are smarter, they're going to look at silver right next door to gold with many of the same properties. Plus, you get the industrial aspect of it. Plus, it's massively undervalued compared to the amount pulled out of the ground. There's so many pluses. And when you look at gold and understand gold as a monetary instrument, it naturally feeds you right to silver. And why would I buy gold when silver has 100 times more potential for increasing in value than gold?
In the past, you've mentioned that silver might just approach 1-to-1. And, you know, you make a great case for it.
The easiest case is that there's this equal amounts of each above ground right now, about 6 billion ounces. So that right off the top of the bat says, okay, there's something wrong with the pricing mechanism right now. Plus, silver is a massive industrial metal. I mean, it's used in everything from solar panels to the new energy technologies that are coming down the line to the new batteries that are going to be powering our cars. So absolutely, you can make 1,000 different cases for the 1-to-1 ratio with silver and gold. But right now, it's so ridiculous. It's, 75-to-1?
I've got another bullet point for you. I was reading through the World Gold Council. They noted, and this is, I think, a direct quote, there is twice as much gold above ground reserve stockpiles than there is silver per. I didn't say industrial. Investment purposes than gold. So that's just one more bullet to add to your impressive list.
And it all stems from the manipulation of price of both, because both are completely manipulated. Both are prices we see are not the real value, not the fair market value based on a true exchange. the price that the bankers want you to understand is the price of gold and is the price of silver to keep the old system.
Well, good luck with that scheme, fellas, because there's a new sheriff in town. And it wears a crypto badge of transparency.
All right, Bix Weir, tell folks more about, you know, how they can find out your great stuff online and any contact information, please.
Go to roadtoruta.com and sign up for free emails. I'm doing a lot of videos these days about the cryptos because there's so much to learn. But I'm also talking about silver and the coming transition out of the old system.
Exactly. Look for the guy with the cool hats. Bix Weir, Happy New Year.
Absolutely.
Okay, Robert, thanks for another excellent installment. Well, that wraps up this week's GoldSeek.com radio episode. For two new big guests, be sure to check out next week's show. Until we talk to you again, have a great week.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice. Thank you.